Here's the deal. If you have a goal of what you want to do in life, you need to get up off your rear end and go after it and start working towards it. But if you assume that it's going to come easy, then you're in the wrong line of work. If you think it's going to be clear for you, it's in the wrong line of work. Every time that I've looked to somebody else to try to build my business, every time I've looked for somebody where I have given up power to try to help me, it has failed royally in my business. It has cost me a lot of money.
The ball is always in your court.
It has to be. And my learning in life is that if it is to be, it's up to me.
Is your business struggling right now? You might think that it's because you don't have enough sales. But the reality is, it's because you don't have the attention of the marketplace. This is attention equals dollars. You deserve more. Your business deserves more. And I'm here to teach you everything that I know on how to get the attention that you need and to turn that attention into dollars. Welcome to the Attention Equals Dollars podcast. I'm your host, Luke Nessler, where each week we come to you live from the Impact Media offices to talk to you about how you get attention online and turn that into sales. This podcast is your roadmap. It's your blueprint. How do you get attention? How do you actually make something tangible come from that attention on social media? As always, you can listen to us on iTunes. You can watch us live on Facebook and YouTube. Be sure to rate, review, and subscribe to our podcast on iTunes. That's how we help more people. That's how people discover us. And be sure to like and subscribe to the Facebook and YouTube channel. Guys, I'm excited about today's episode. We have a really, really exciting guest, a power player, and somebody that I'm excited to bring to you for the simple reason of this gentleman helps people win the mental warfare game. And it's something that I realized very, very early on when I was an amateur athlete and now a professional businessman, how important the mental game is. If you come into work terrified of what might happen, if you're getting ready to create that content on social media, terrified of what you look like, what people might say, it defeats you mentally and it hinders your performance. We've got an awesome guest today, Brett McCabe. He's a clinical psychologist. He works with organizations like the PGA, University of Alabama. Quite simply, he helps to build champions and helps them win that mental warfare. Brett, appreciate you being here today, man. I'm happy to have you on the podcast. Welcome to the Attention Equals Dollars podcast.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So let's just jump right into it. How important is it for whether you're an athlete or a business person to come mentally prepared for the game? Now, an athlete, obviously the game is simple. A business person, the game is Monday through Friday, 9 to 5, the business hours. How important is it to come mentally prepped for that?
Well, I mean, obviously it's massive, but one thing you got to remember is when it's easy and things are going well, we often don't spend a lot of time evaluating and picking apart our mental game. It's not until we start struggling that we start identifying where there's opportunities to grow and to learn and to get better. The best of the best usually have a process behind it. And that process has been put together over years and years of work, whether it's studying from mentors, trial and error in their own experiences, and then the stubbornness that they have about their overall belief systems to continue to push. So they formed this process. And that's why when we see great athletes compete, we see great organizations do their job and continue to win each and every opportunity that's in front of them. We're not so much questioning how they do it. What we often say is, how do they have the commitment and the excellence to continue to do it every single day? Because look, it's hard. The mental game separates the wannabes from the people who actually get it done. They separate the imposters from the people who stand up on the stage and win the awards. The mental game, everything begins in the mind. So once we understand that and we can understand what each person does in their game, in their preparation, in their business, in their daily life, then you can start building a plan that helps them maximize it and helps them win every single moment they go through.
Got it. I got it. So let's take a step back then. So how did you get started in doing what you're doing today? Obviously, with the mind side, your business, what led you to that, to where you realized, look, I need to help athletes with this, and I can help athletes with this?
Well, it was, I actually kind of went into psychology somewhat begrudgingly. I was a business major in college, wanted to go to law school. My roommate at the time was going to be a top 10 pick in the Major League Baseball draft. I had some struggles at LSU as a player, had kind of reached some success and then lost it due to some injuries. It was my mind. I was kind of done. I figured I was not going to really ever reach what I had in front of me. I kind of had a bad break. And I turned to a guy to help me focus, relax out there, compete, and help me. And it actually led me to having a lot of success my last 2 years in college. Well, when I got done with that, I started realizing it's like, look, this mental side is very important. We always knew that in the team I worked with and team I played on. You know, we'd won 2 national titles in my first 3 years there. They ended up winning 5 and 10. And we knew how big the mental game was. But until you really get your hands in it and your fingers in it, you don't really know what it's all about. So when I finished, I was sitting there thinking, I was like, look, you know, I could go to law school, I could go to business, but this mental game has a lot to do with it. And so I decided I wanted to be a psychologist. And it's a funny story. I actually changed my major halfway through at the end of my 4th year. I had 1 more year to play. Changed my major, called my girlfriend at the time, who's my wife now, and said, look, I'm going to change my major to psychology. And she's like, well, what does that entail? And I said, well, it's going to take an extra year of schooling. And then it's going to take 5 years of graduate work. And she's like, well, how, you know, is it worth it? I'm like, oh, absolutely. It's worth it. It's the greatest thing in the world. And I changed, and I was about a 3-2 student who really never really applied himself in college. And all of a sudden I changed to psychology. I was making 4-0s. And I sat down with our academic.
You think because you weren't being challenged enough where you were before?
I wasn't interested. I wasn't, you know, I wanted to go to law school. I had the material to take the LSAT, which is the law school admissions test, but I had never taken it. I mean, I wasn't called to it. And I didn't think I was going to be called to psychology because the only psychology class I'd ever taken was a bunch of people that did not look like me, act like me, or think like me. And I actually struggled in that class. And when I changed my major, I went and met with our academic counselor and I said, you know, what is this pathway? And she's like, look, if you're going to do a degree in psychology, you're pretty much at a loss unless you get your doctorate. And here's how you do it. And she's like, but you probably won't get into LSU because they don't like to take people who come from their undergrad program.
Sure.
And I was like, well, man, I'm not even in the undergrad program and already telling me I can't get in. And I said, my wife or my girlfriend was going to go to nursing school in Baton Rouge through one of the other universities. And I was like, you know what? I don't have a choice. So she said, all right, if you don't have a choice, then you got to maximize what you're doing. You got to get involved in whatever. So my last year playing ball, I got really involved in the athletic department, got very involved in the psychology department, got very involved in my academics, took the exam, took the GRE, which is different than the LSAT, nailed it, crushed it out of the park. And then a professor saw something in me and brought me in. So I specialized at first in clinical psychology. How the graduate program works is you come in under a major professor, and this is in a PhD program. You come in under a major professor and they guide you and they mentor you for about 4 or 5 years doing research and clinical training, and you get experiences. So it's kind of, it's not too different than like med school where you're doing clinical rounds as well as academic rounds, but I loved every minute of it. I mean, I was getting up at 5 o'clock in the morning. I had a young child. I was coming to bed at 8 o'clock at night, you know, coming home from work after doing rounds is what I loved. So when I finished my training, I did my internship at Brown Medical School up in Rhode Island and actually took a job in the pharmaceutical industry. I did that for about 8 years because I had small kids. I wanted to understand business performance. I was fascinated by it. And then we moved down to Alabama, and after about 5 or 6 years in the pharmaceutical industry, I started itching. And the itching was not so much about wanting to get out of a very lucrative position in pharma. It was the fact that I had to have my butt on the line. I felt that as somebody who wanted to compete, that I wanted to start something and I wanted to have the risk. And I had such a stable job that it was easy and there really wasn't a whole lot of fun to it. There wasn't a whole lot of excitement. And I felt that I needed to have my butt on the line. And
let's talk about that real quick, because I've never heard somebody else say that, but I actually, now that you're saying that, I agree with you. So I played high school football. I raced BMX competitively, cycling competitively for years. And I feel like that is one of the main things that has allowed me to be extremely successful in what I do. I'm competitive and I look for that. I get bored if my butt's not on the line. So do you think that came from your athletic background? Do you think that came from somewhere else? Do you think athletes naturally are going to make better business people and more successful business professionals?
I would say that the myth is that athletes make better business people. The problem is in today's athletic world, we have so many things that are given to athletes that usually it's the person who's hungry that wants it. And for many times athletes, it comes easy for them. But I'm going to tell you where it came from for me. My dad, I'm an only child. My dad was in the military. He went to pharmacy school because he couldn't afford to go to med school. Always regretted not going to medical school, despite the fact being admitted to like Johns Hopkins and other places. I mean, he had great opportunities. Went into pharmacy in the military and didn't like it. and thought, you know, if I'm going to be in the Air Force, I want to fly. So he reclassified, became a navigator for C-130s, flew in Vietnam for 2 terms and was in conflict for 3. And it was, he loved it, but he always regretted not going to med school. And after I was born, he married after he'd been in the military for 10 years. The military came back to him and said, look, we'll pay for you to go to med school, but you just have to owe us more time. And he wanted to, but he was afraid that it was going to destroy the family because med school was so stressful. And so when he retired from the Air Force, he went back into pharmacy, and he was always unhappy. He was never happy doing something because he felt that he wasn't using what he was trained, and that a pharmacist, while very important, is oftentimes seen as a technician. And so he had bounced around jobs quite a bit, finally got into a position where he was leading a hospital, and a very large hospital's pharmacy, and then started consulting. And then he got very ill, and he got on death's door for a couple months and came back, lost a lot of weight, had a lot of medical conditions, went back to work. But this time he went back to work on his terms, and he went back as a relief pharmacist in a drugstore. And he called me one day and he said, you know, I finally found my purpose. And he said, I fought this for so long because I never was happy doing what I was doing, but I finally found my purpose is when I invested in my clients, my customers, and helped them. Many of the people were confused about why they were taking medicines, what had been prescribed of them, and if I could provide them some light and some guidance. And he said, don't ever, and as he was getting near the end of his life, he said, don't ever regret not going for what you dream for. Mm. And he said, it took me a long time to realize what the fact that me passing on med school to finally resolve that in me to be happy with what I was doing in my life. But he said, don't ever do that. And so when I was sitting there in pharma, I mean, I had a great job and everything was paid for, car insurance, my office and my house, any supplies I wanted, 90% of my meals. I mean, it was crazy. But I knew that that job was only going to last for so long because in a pharmaceutical company in the division I was in, you're only as good as the product, and the product was going to go off patent, which meant that they weren't going to invest any money in the medical side.
It turned you into a commodity.
A commodity. And I had looked at some other jobs and I thought, you know what? I always wanted to work with athletes. I don't know how to do it. And I would reach out to other people and say, hey, look, why don't we partner to go into a gym together? That didn't work. It was actually very toxic and I lost a lot of money. Okay. Then I would look for somebody else. And finally, I remembered something my dad told me, and he had passed away right after I left the pharmaceutical company. And I had left the company and said, I'm going to go out on my own. And my wife gave me an ultimatum. She said, if you can make as much money in 1 month doing the consulting as you do in the pharmaceutical world, then you can leave. Well, in February of that 1 month, I did it. And I worked a full-time job in the pharmaceutical company, exploded all my metrics because I wasn't going to fail, and consulted on the side. They allowed me to do consulting and consult on the side, and I made more money. It was a very profitable month. I don't think my wife really realized I was going to do it, but I did it. And my dad, you know, was very clear about it. He said, look, if you're going to do it, go for it. I felt the need to be able to say that at the end of the day, success or failure, that I invested in me. And then I believed in me. It was so many of us take the safe way. Look, so many of us take the safe out. Now, I'm not saying everybody should leave what they're doing and go start a business, but so many of us are stuck in unhappy scenarios, whether it's life, performance, whatever, because they're afraid of what may happen and they overlook what is currently happening. And for me,
so let's talk about that because Brett, that's my audience. The people that know, I mean, look, nothing to hide here. This podcast is about how do you make money by getting attention online? Well, the number one reason that people don't do what they need to do online to get attention is they're afraid.
Yeah.
And they know that they need to do it, but they're afraid. So they don't. And they resort to things that don't work that keep them in that unhappy place. Conventional ways of advertising that might have worked before that don't work today, like radio or TV. They know it's going to keep them in that unhappy place. They know it's not working. They know that their customers on Facebook and Instagram and YouTube, but they're afraid to put their brand out there. They're afraid to talk about themselves and promote themselves because what others might say. Mm-hmm. So you went through that same fear of, I mean, obviously it was scary, but then you did something about it. So how did you handle it? And what should somebody listening today, how can they overcome that fear that's keeping them in a bad place?
Well, you know, first of all, you have to, so in all my athletes, you know, I like to say, you know, I build champions. Okay. And so in the champion process, there's a 4-step process that has worked over and over and over again. And this is what people have to understand. If you're in a point of discontent and you're unhappy with what you're doing, you first have to do an assessment of what in the hell is going on. Because so many of the emotions that we feel are so cluttered. And for me, I was unhappy in pharma. It wasn't the job. So switching to another pharma job wasn't the issue. The real issue of my assessment was I had to look at why I was unhappy. Because the second step of that is we have to identify what the true target behavior is, what the true problem is, and then we have to solve it. For me, I was unhappy in the pharmaceutical industry because I wasn't being challenged. I felt that I needed to invest and go all in on me. And at that time in my life, we had a daughter who was starting high school. We had no financial plan for her to go to college. My wife was a tennis mom. She was a workout mom. You know, she runs my business now and she's incredible. She's my business partner. She's the greatest asset of our business. But she was leaving a life where her whole day was, what time am I going to exercise? Okay. Sure. And she did a lot of other things in the family, but now we were going to add a whole business in. And so the third step though is once you mastered that moment, once you win that target behavior, the issue, then you start learning other skills to be successful. And then the last step is how to master, how to become the expert. And so for me, so many of the people are like me out there where you're unhappy, but you don't know what it is. So you displace it on things like your relationships, you displace it about your personal health, you displace it on other stuff. But the truth of the matter is you're unhappy, and you're unhappy because you're not doing something that fulfills you. Look, we live a life to prevent mistakes. We live a life to prevent failure. We live a life to prevent suffering. The truth of the matter is, if you follow, whether it's the Buddhist mentality or whatever your philosophy in life is, we all suffer. So if you can accept the fact that you all suffer, and you can accept the fact, like Ryan Holiday's book, Obstacles Away and Ego is the Enemy, must read for any entrepreneur, is the fact that through our obstacles, we grow. Well, if we're trying to prevent our problems, then you're never going to live. You're just preventing. Right. And so for many of us, you sit and you plan, you ruminate, you worry. Here's the deal. If you have a goal of what you want to do in life, you need to get up off your rear end and go after it and start working towards it. But if you assume that it's going to come easy, then you're in the wrong line of work. If you think it's going to be clear for you, it's in the wrong line of work. Every time that I've looked to somebody else to try to build my business, every time I've looked for somebody where I have given up power to try to help me, it has failed royally in my business. It has cost me a lot of money. It has to be. And my learning in life is that if it is to be, it's up to me. I have to do it. And so for people who are sitting there and are unhappy, you have to truly do the assessment. Take the time to figure out why. I tell everybody, look, it's called red wine therapy. Take a piece of 8.5 by 11 piece of paper, copy paper. At the top of the page, write, I want. On the back, why I can't, or my barriers. Okay. Pour yourself a glass of red wine. Get a little relaxed and then just put on some music and write as much on that I want page as you can. Let it go, unfilter it. Do not stop the flow. Then on the back, what is preventing you? What are all the reasons and excuses you're telling yourself why you can't succeed? And write them all down. Okay, now once you do that, you come back to it in a couple of days, the wants will start moving into categories. Okay, and they'll be related. Now, if you say, I want a, you know, $16 million house in Napa, okay, well, that's going to take something to get there. Okay. That's not really a want. That's a material one. Once we start understanding what our passion is, what feeds us, then it starts leading to actions. Those actions end up leading to results. Okay. And it's the thoughts to the behaviors, you know, and so on. And so for people, and whether it's an athlete or anything, we get so caught up in not wanting to put ourselves out there because we're afraid of what may come back at us because we're afraid to look at it. But if you know what you want, then that information becomes valuable versus punishment.
So somebody could utilize that exercise that you just gave them to where, whether it be self-promotion online or whether it be, you know, they know they need to go to the gym, they know that they're fat, they know they're out of shape, but they just don't want to, they can use that exercise that you gave them to remind them of what they really want.
But if they go back to those, correct. But if they go back to those four steps, you're going to look at it. Look, yeah.
So you assess, identify, and then I have master. What did I miss?
Okay. You missed is, well, hold on. So you got to assess what's going on. You got to identify the target behavior. You got to learn other skills. So you got to enrich your skill sets. Okay. Then you master. Now, what happens is we're looking at this and you look in the mirror and you're like, man, I'm just overweight. And I don't really, why do you want to get in shape? Because you have to? Never going to work. Okay. When we have to do something, doctor says you're out of shape and you're going to have to lose weight in order to not go on diabetes meds. You will lose enough weight so that the medicine's no longer an issue, but you're not going to continue to go. We only really engage in long-term growth when we want to do something. Okay, so that's why people lose weight to go on high school reunions. That's why they lose weight to go on vacations, because they want to. There's a reason. Okay, so when you're going through your life and you look at, why am I not losing weight? Well, we've got to do the assessment. And then what's the real issue? Like, I'll tell you right now, for me, the reason why I don't like to exercise is I don't enjoy it. Okay, it's not even just I don't enjoy it. I did it for so long because I had to, that when I go in there, I don't work out for function anymore. I used to work out for function.
So the fact that that hatred towards, you just, I don't enjoy it, it's not fun, it outweighs what really you desire. It's not like you're trying to have that beach body. I mean, you would just rather be doing something else.
Well, it was so funny. When we started the business, my dad was in ICU. We started this CrossFit-like gym. My wife and I got into incredible shape. I mean, it was the best shape I had gotten since I was playing. I enjoyed it at that moment. But my problem is, and you know, we'd exercise and we'd go to ICU, right? I mean, it was so regimented. But now there's so many other things that I enjoy in my business, right? There's so many other things that I enjoy doing. I love the comp. I don't need to compete in the gym to have my name up on a whiteboard, okay? I used to train because it would help me throw harder or recover faster. I didn't do it because my jeans didn't fit. Right. Now, that's for me. I enjoy the competition of business. I enjoy it. But soon, as the rest of my business settles back down, I will go back into exercising because it's going to be an investment in me. Mm-hmm. I want to do it. Right now, I'm not beating myself up about not doing it because I don't want to make it a punishment. I enjoy the business. I enjoy the building. And so each person has to understand, if you understand what you want, then you can build the plan to get there. It's no different than a player who comes to me and says, I want to be number one in the world at golf. Okay. Had a player call me yesterday. Well, I'm struggling. I'm not happy. I want to be the best player. And okay, what are you willing to do and why do you want to do it? Okay. If what are you willing to do means, are you willing to make some changes and get to the real issue at hand? And what are you willing to sacrifice to get there? What are you willing to give up? Okay. Well, if you're not willing to give up your current style, then you're going to do it because you feel like you have to. But those that come and say, I'm going to do this because it's what I want to do and I'm going to go for it. It's amazing how we duck and move and jive and adjust, and we make the choices to help us be successful. Once we do that, it's easy. But it's like your point, talking about doing things in social media. When I started the Mindside, you know, I had some good clients that I'd been working with before I went out on my own. And every marketing company I'd work with would say, hey, listen, if you just put your clients on your front page of your website, it will prove your credibility and more people will come to see it. And I'm like, I'm not going to do that. And they said, well, no, what do you mean? Everybody does it in your industry. I said, well, not everybody who works on the mindset, okay, is actually a clinical psychologist. In fact, I'd say that less than 1% of mindset coaches are actually licensed and trained in the actual assessment and the treatment and the coaching of mindset. Okay, there's a lot of people who say, oh, I'm a mindset coach. Great. They have no rules. They have no ethics. They don't have to report to a licensing board. I do. So I can't use my clients to advertise.
Sure.
So now,
What are some of the ways that you've used to get the attention of the clients that you need? If, you know, a lot of people do rely on the customer testimonial, look who I'm working with. What are some of the ways that you've showcased your skill set in a way that you've used that attention to generate you new customers, new leads, whatever it may be?
Do damn good work that gets results and people talk. Very simple. So if I'm watching a business, now business is different than I am, all right? Because a business can say, hey, look, this person is very happy with the windows we put in their house, okay? That's an important testimonial. They can put that on the website. I can't go to a client and say, hey, because we've overcome some very big challenges in your life, can you give me a testimonial? So the way I've looked at it is said, I'm going to make my craft as good as I can. I'm going to get as good as I can. I'm going to work my butt off to be better and better at what I do. When I make somebody and help somebody become the champion that they are, they will talk and they will tell somebody else who's in need, hey, you need to go see my buddy, Brett. That's exactly what happened yesterday. A very high ranked player on the PGA Tour called me and said, hey, your work with one of your guys that's in the top five is a buddy of mine. And he told me, and he said, I've been watching you from a distance. He said, it's interesting. I go on your website. I don't see any of these clients' names. I like that because I know you're here to work for me. So my answer to that in my industry, the way that I did it was my social media use is about showing access. It's about showing relatability. It's around highlighting like I'm out there, but I'm not actually showing you who I'm working with. So if I'm at a golf tournament tomorrow, I'll be with a college for basketball. I'll tweet that I'm in the area, but I'm not going to show anything I do with the players. Sure. But, you know, what's happened is I've had numerous players now call me, and every professional thing that says, hey, look, I got your name from somebody I trust. And I went on the website. I know you're not going to use me to market. And that's cool. But every business is different. You have to look at it. If I'm at a car dealership place, I want to see testimonials on that website. I want to see people. But if you tell me to go see somebody, your value and your word means so much more to me than somebody on the testimonial that I don't even know is accurate.
Yeah. Okay? Yeah.
So I know it's different.
So your business is obviously, and your, you know, specifically your business is much different than the majority of the people that are watching, to where it's looked at as a thing of respect when you're not marketing the athletes that you're working with. So I think the biggest takeaway, at least, and this is awesome, I wrote this down, your four steps, it's something that every single one of you watching and listening to the podcast today should understand, because as you're going through 1 through 4, assess, identify, learn, and master, no matter what problem you're having, and again, this, since this show is about marketing, let's break it down with that. Assess the situation. Okay, my competitor is beating my ass right now. That's me assessing the situation. What's the issue? I need to identify the fact that more people know them than me.
And why?
Now I need to learn how to fix that, right?
Yep.
Absolutely. So then, and then master the tools that are going to allow me to fix the situation, which in my case, mastering Facebook, mastering Instagram. And so is that how that would fit into my realm?
Absolutely. Yeah. So the assessment is, let's not be in a hurry to make a mistake here. Let's take a breath back and say, what's the real issue? You know, if you walk into an emergency room and you tell the doctor you're hurting, they're going to do a full assessment to find out where you're hurting. Okay, now if you walk in and say, my right toe is hurting, they're not going to look at your head. Okay, So we have to be very clear about what we want. So the assessment is understanding, and through that process, what is important. I know in our business that I get sometimes, my team at the office, I have an amazing team. They'll come and look at me and say, Brett, we're jumping over the place, because I get real excited on things. Like, oh, we could do this, we could do that, we could showcase this, we could, and they're like, we got to get very good. So sometimes I skip the assessment part, because it comes to me and I trust my gut. Well, my gut has worked for me a lot, but with a bigger team, it doesn't give them the best understanding. Once we do the assessment, and then we say, look, this is the behavior we're going to go after. Guys, we are going to go out there and do, you know, right now we're launching a pretty incredible online program that is open for the public, but it's starting out in the high schools to provide high schools with mental training across their entire athletic department. The assessment was that there is a definite need in the marketplace for a consistent, high-quality training in high schools. The target is, we're going to come up with a product that's going to allow us to do it. Then from that, we're going to grow into other actions and learn other skills. That's going to allow us to move it out to the general public. And then we're going to become the master. My goal is to win the online training market for people who want to understand mindset. No doubt about it. So give me some examples. On the first one, we'd be dead.
Give me some examples of, and then we'll close the show after this. Give me an example. I'm somebody that's struggling in business. I know that I'm getting beat. So I've made the assessment that I'm getting beat. What are some mindset techniques that I can use to where I'm down in the dumps? I'm terrified. I'm scared every day. I'm barely paying rent. I have the skill to get the job done and actually make a successful business. But my foggy brain, I've had so many bad days in a row that I've just come into work. I'm half-assing it because I'm operating out of fear rather than out of what I actually need to be doing. What are some things that someone like that can do mentally to prep themselves to win the day?
Well, you nailed it. Okay. So you're working half-assed because you're trying to make your rent. You're trying to do things. You're not trying to win. Look, we have to compete to win every moment we're in. And if you're not willing to win, then you're not going to learn the competitive skills to get over the major humps. You may survive, but you're not going to win. And there's a major difference between surviving and winning. Okay. It's even bigger than thriving. I mean, look, we're talking winning is dominating each and every day. Right now, if you are sitting in an unhappy position and your business is struggling, you've got to be willing to take a look at everything that's going on in that business and saying, am I the problem? Is this the problem? And if you want to continue the same patterns, the longstanding patterns of thinking and behaving, you will continue to get the same results. Okay. They are called patterns for a reason, and patterns are comfortable. Most people don't want to abandon a comfortable pattern, even if it's uncomfortable, but because it's predictable, to go out to something that's unpredictable, that's uncertain, and that is going to expose a lot of vulnerability. It's why people, you know, when the economy tanks, people don't freak out every time it drops. They freak out when the drop is unexpected. The unexpected nature of life is what kills us. So if you're sitting there, you're more worried about the unexpected. You have to go back and ask yourself from that assessment is, can I manage uncertainty? Can I be, what tools can I manage? What tools do I have amongst me to work through the uncertainty? Well, if you're a business owner and you're spending your time doing a business plan, you're not out there making customers. You're not out there working for customers. If you were the person that started the business, but you're sitting in your office every day now, you need to get back out on that road and go make appointments with clients, and you need to sell your business. If you're waiting for somebody else to do it, you're going to be lost. Now, I'm not saying a business plan is not important, but don't spend your time writing a business plan when you can be out there hustling customers.
Focusing on actions that are going to help you win.
Absolutely.
I agree with you. Brett, I don't have any idea how to write a business plan. And I've built a successful business. I've never seen one. No idea what to put in one. I spoke at a school of business yesterday or 2 days ago, and I said, look, you can't teach somebody entrepreneurship. It's impossible because they don't teach you the shit that you're going to deal with in the real world. And taking action and coming to work, you're not able to predict what's going to happen that day.
Yep.
So I like,
business plans, usually business plans are the ones that are asked for by people who you're going to get funding from. And they're not going to give you the money anyways at a startup. So just stop it. Just go out and hustle the business.
Yeah.
When they start calling you, then you know you made it.
Brett, I love this. I think I'm going to use this today and every day to your four steps: assess, identify, learn, and master. I mean, we just used marketing and social media as one area, but you can use that in every single area of your life. And then, when I ask, what does that person that's really struggling need to do? And just competing to win. I love that. And I think that's something that if you're an athlete or were an athlete, I don't care if you played high school football or college, collegiate ball, that's something that resonates immediately with an athlete. But do you have any advice or any tips on somebody that maybe wasn't an athlete at all? For example, Aaron, my producer, he's a musician. What if he starts his business and he's never had that athlete mindset to where compete to win. That's beat into you if you're an athlete, but he's never been an athlete before that I know of. Maybe I'm wrong, Aaron. So what can someone that's never been an athlete do to flip that switch to compete to win?
Look, the sports world is not the only place we compete, man. Life is a competition. It's survival of the fittest. And so if you want to be a musician, but you don't want to play in front of anybody, then you're playing music to relax for you. Mm-hmm. All right. So nobody's going to come find you and pay you. You've got to be willing to stand out on the limb and be vulnerable. There's a reason why Brené Brown's books right now are so successful. Our environment, our culture of today's world, we resist the need, the experience of vulnerability. It scares the living crap out of most people because we want to give the impression, one, that we've got it all together, but two, we're actually afraid of the depths that we could go in ourselves and be stuck in that uncertainty. You have to be vulnerable. And so the vulnerability nature is not so much about emptying out your bank account. Your vulnerability is being able to say, I can experience the full range of emotions and I'm okay. I can get to the depths of failure and I'm okay. I'm not going to like it. I'm not going to want that to happen. But if that does happen, I can go get a job. That's why I used to tell my wife, look, we're going to start this business. If it doesn't work, I'll go get another job and we'll pay back the debt. Okay.
Got it.
But we have no debt now because the reason is that it was a business of me going out there and hustling. And she'd wake me up at 11 o'clock at night and say, hey, how are we going to make payroll next week? I'm like, well, I'm going to get out to work. And next thing I know, we hit it every time. If you want it bad enough and you're willing to make the sacrifices to get it, more than likely, you're going to find a way to get close to what you're trying to do. It may not be the exact thing you thought it was, but you'll get it done.
I firmly believe that and agree with that. I was talking to my business partner last week, or a couple weeks ago. We're at the 10X Growth Con and we had breakfast. And I said, I think every single small business could be extremely successful if they had the skin, the drive, and the fight to put up with the BS and just the hell that everybody's going to go through. Yeah. It's just weeds it out. It's just like training camp. It weeds out the weak, and success isn't easy no matter if it's Pop Warner football, the NFL, PGA, or in business.
Yeah.
Those that go through more shit than somebody else are going to win. And that's what you help athletes do. You help them perform at a high level. Obviously, business owners need to do the same thing.
I've got a buddy of mine who's a former Navy SEAL, and you know, we all love the SEALs, but this guy's the most non-Navy SEAL guy you'd ever meet. and I mean, he's not the rah-rah super testosterone guy. And he actually trained the individuals to go to BUDS. And so they have a pre-training that they go to. Wow. And he had an 88% success rate of people who made it to BUDS. And he said, the reason is that if you have a foot out the door, you'll always take it. He said, people who make it through BUDS have no alternative. They have nothing to go back to. He said, if you as in the Navy are willing to go sit on a boat, then you're not going to pass BUDS. He said, we had people who made it through Hell Week who quit because they just wanted to go through Hell Week. They didn't want to be a SEAL. They just wanted to go through Hell Week. They wanted to say they could do it. He said, you've got to be willing to sit there and realize that in something like BUDS, they're going to find your one weakness and they're going to exploit it for as long as they can to see what your depths are. That's what we do in life. Look, if you hate managing people, guess what you're going to have to do? You're going to have to learn how to manage people. Yep. It's going to exploit you at some point. You've got to be willing to learn. We don't have all the answers. What we have are lesson plans that we've got to experience in order to get better.
Right. No, I love that. Brett, where can people find you? Social media, website, podcast?
Yeah, there's two ways to do it. One is through the company. It's called At The Mindside. It's themindside.com, but all the social media platforms are At The Mindside. And then you can follow my personal ones is at Dr. Brett McCabe. And I spell Brett, B-H-R-E-T-T. So it's at Dr. Brett McCabe. And that's Instagram and Twitter. And I'm sure there's stuff on Facebook. But I'm not the best on social media. I love doing it. I love stalking. Instagram, I'll work with clients all day and then I'll come back and my team will say, hey, did you Insta story anything? I'm like, I'm sorry, I was working the entire time. I forgot to take out my phone. I'll be on the, you know, I'll be somewhere. So
that's exactly why, and it's actually exactly why I wanted you on the show. You know, obviously we bring experts on the show. Now, you just admitted I'm not a social media expert. I don't, you know, necessarily use it the right way. The reason I had you on the show is because you can't be an expert at anything until you get your mindset right. And what you told us today with assess, identify, learn, master, compete to win, life as a competition, even if you've never been an athlete, those are all things that every single person, if they're going to be successful in business and be able to master social media, you've got to have the right mindset. So you were my expert today to help us get in the right mindset, even though you just admitted, you know, you're not a social media expert. You're a mindset expert.
That's exactly
right. I love it. Brett, I appreciate you being on the show. I'm looking forward to doing some stuff with you. And our buddies, Steve and Hank, hooked us up. And I'm grateful for that. And I'm sure we'll be talking pretty soon in the future. Listen, if you guys are watching the show and you have not subscribed to the podcast, be sure to go to iTunes. Rate, review, subscribe. That's how more people find us. Be sure to like the Luke Nessler Facebook page to be able to watch these live every week, as well as subscribe to the YouTube channel. We'll be putting Dr. Brett McCabe's information in the description of the podcast. Be sure to check out all of his channels. He does put a lot of great content out. And Brett, I'm looking forward to building a relationship with you.
Absolutely. Looking forward to it.
All right, we'll talk soon. Is your business struggling right now? You might think that it's because you don't have enough sales. But the reality is, it's because you don't have the attention of the marketplace. This is attention equals dollars. You deserve more. Your business deserves more. And I'm here to teach you everything that I know on how to get the attention that you need and to turn that attention into dollars.